This is episode 343 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, August the 1st, 2011.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Mr. Zuckerberg, do I have your full attention?
Why would anyone trust this government not to make a complete and utter shambolic mess of the national broadband network?
Which part of time would they like us to go back to? 1960, 1930?
Can you really give that guarantee when you don't seem to know what peak speed is? I'll tell you what it is.
Okay, great. Let's give everybody a case.
The future is here.
So how technology has caught up with reality.
Ever since Telstra was privatised, Australians have suffered.
Technology has had a huge impact on our love lives.
On air, on the internet and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody, I'm Andrew McComb and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. It may or may not surprise you, with the Australian consumer watchdog, the ACCC, taking to the telcos in this country with a big stick, some are actually falling into line, including the biggest recalcitrant, Telstra. But is seeing believing? It was reported in the media last week that Telstra has started providing customers with a summary of offer document laying out the true cost of taking a new telecommunications service, and it looks like Primus and VHA will be doing the same. According to the report, in a plan agreed to by industry and coordinated by the Communications Alliance, a summary document would be presented to new customers online or at the point of sale in lieu of the fine print that was normally worked into advertisements. The summary included information on the monthly access price, additional charges, plan inclusions and exclusions, contract length, exit fees, termination dates, and eligibility requirements. In public submissions to the Australian Communications and Media Authority's Reconnecting the Customer inquiry, Telstra said it provided the summary in-store, on its website and by mail to customers who requested more information, but it may not be presented at every customer interaction, including those over the phone or on a phone bill, because it may lead to disclosure fatigue for the customer. Telstra wrote in its submission that in some cases the customer may have already done their research online or gone in store to obtain a summary of offer for the plan they're interested in, but the supplier will not know definitely if this is the case. Despite several submissions pointing to an ACCC undertaking with major telcos in 2009 over reforming advertising practices, the extent to which customers would go to read the fine print included in advertising or on websites or in proposed summaries had been dragged into arguments into several prominent federal court cases. As technology changes so frequently and the goalposts have a tendency of moving all by themselves, it may pay to become familiar with the true cost of the service you're about to subscribe to. The ACCC is pushing for supermarket-style pricing for telecommunications products so we can all make an educated decision on our purchase. So hopefully, with clear pricing and true costs, we may see the end of the horrific cap offers, which have proliferated over the past decade or so. After all, it's caps which hide the true value of a purchase.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Firstly, a big warm welcome to stations now taking Tech Talk Radio on the Community Radio Network. Tech Talk Radio has been on the airwaves for the past 7 years and is truly an independent tech talk show. And on this week's show, Apple becomes the world's top smartphone vendor and patents a new keyless keyboard. Optus bids for home phones with the launch of a femtocell. Google offers to rewrite the web in an effort to make it faster. As well, the Google streetcars will be doing another pass of Australian streets in the not-too-distant future. And Adam Turner takes a look at the new Hewlett-Packard touchpad. First up, though, here's Dr. Ron with this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio News Desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, the NBN Co. blasts media coverage of so-called evil hacker. Google updates its Australian Street View imagery. China shuts down fake Apple stores. And the Australian Bureau of Statistics goes online for this year's census. Welcome to Tech Talk News. A 25-year-old Cowra man was arrested by federal police last week after allegedly hacking into a number of internet service providers. Mr. David Cecil, using the internet handle Evil, was remanded in custody after being charged with 50 computer trespass offences. Some incursions allegedly compromised systems owned by Platform Networks, which is one of 13 companies connected to the fledgling National Broadband Network. Australian Federal Police Assistant Commissioner Mr Neil Gawn.
What he'd basically done is he'd tunnelled into their system. He had bypassed their firewalls. He'd also bypassed all their security systems. That he basically was in a position where he was mapping their infrastructure, which enabled him, if you like, to be in a position to compromise not only the network more broadly, but also the system, where he could basically collapse it if he seemed necessary to do so.
But Chief Executive in charge of NBNCo, Mr Michael Quigley, responded angrily to the AFP's comments and accused the media of distorting the truth. He said that the NBN itself was not hacked, had not been compromised, had not been placed at risk, and its security had not been breached. Mr Quigley also dismissed claims made by opposition communication spokesman Mr Malcolm Turnbull that the offender had been able to map the technical architecture of the NBN. The General Manager of Australia's Computer Emergency Response Team, Mr Graham Ingram, said people should be more concerned with a larger security issue of home computers infected with malware being connected to the NBN. Here's Mr Ingram on ABC Radio last week.
The issue that we have on the NBN is if you're connecting up the home PCs, which in many cases are infected and controlled by criminals, if you're connecting them to high-speed networks, and fibre to the home will do that, then how are we as a country going to manage that security threat?
Police say the arrest was made after a seven-month investigation into computer hacking in Sydney and Melbourne, and that further arrests are likely. Meanwhile, the first Melbourne site will be connected to the NBN this week. A group of 1,300 lucky households in Brunswick, in Melbourne's north, will start testing services on the National Broadband Network. Each has been fitted with a fibre optic cable connection. The Sydney Morning Herald reports that two other test sites in New South Wales have already been launched and that sites in South Australia and Queensland will be commissioned in coming weeks. To other news, Google last week updated Australian imagery on their Street View mapping service. The update, the first since last year's Wi-Fi sniffing scandal, features higher quality images than had previously been made available. Google's Street View provides users with the ability to view addresses and properties from the point of view of a vehicle in any street. The service is available online and is free of charge. But Google came under fire last year from privacy advocates when it was revealed their Street View cars had collected information about unsecured wireless networks while they were driving around collecting images. After an internal investigation, Google Australia said that although there are no current Australian laws prohibiting the collection of Street View data, Google must remain respectful to Australian residents. Google's product manager, Mr. Andrew Foster, said last week that Google was excited to publish this newer, higher quality imagery and hoped you enjoy using it to explore and share Australia with your friends. Google said that in the interests of privacy, number plates and people's faces were blurred out before Street View images were uploaded to the website. Chinese officials have shut down two fake Apple stores in the southwestern city of Kunming and have investigated another three. Photos were posted on a blog run by a 27-year-old lady working for an international public health organisation. The photos showed the stores selling a range of Apple products, complete with a traditional winding staircase and supposed Apple geniuses wearing blue t-shirts with Apple logos. The Kunming Trade and Industry Bureau identified the fake stores and has shut them down. Apple has just four official stores in China, two in Beijing and two in Shanghai. Apple declined to comment on the particulars of the fake stores in Kunming. And the next national census will be held on Tuesday, the 9th of August this year, and the Australian Bureau of Statistics is encouraging families to participate online. The Census of Population and Housing, conducted once every 5 years, aims to accurately count the number of people in Australia, as well as our key characteristics and the dwellings in which we live. The ABS says that every household and person in Australia is required to answer specific questions on the traditional form or through e-census online. All information collected by the census is strictly private and confidential, and the ABS says that no one outside of the Bureau, including other government agencies, will ever see our responses. The e-census is fast, secure and easy and has online help available. The ABS says this year's e-census is protected by the strongest encryption technologies, making it safe and keeping our information confidential. For more information, visit the Australian Bureau of Statistics website, which is at www.abs.gov.au. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
This is incredible. We're actually doing a radio show. AVCon.
No, AVCon. AVCon. They're very adamant that you say AVCon.
Has he got an asteroid in mind? Does he know something we don't? He's been speaking to Bruce Willis lately.
Graham's sick, but he's yelling at us in the chat.
He's here in spirit, isn't
there
he?
There are many exclamation points.
Don't say that.
No, it does.
What was the first being in space? Was it like an ant?
The population in Google Plus land hit 20 million.
We're going to be relying on the Russian space program now.
Shush.
He just overindulged, I think.
Right.
One too many choc tops.
Yeah. No, I really
don't. What's wrong with them?
They've dropped their prices and everyone's jumping on board.
I've got one question about technology in space.
Every time a new Mac Mini hits the Apple Store, I start to fantasize about building the dream media center PC.
Stop it.
It is.
Too much Apple hate today.
No.
The foot is down.
They were on sale with Telstra just before Easter.
Did you load it up? Absolutely.
You're super nerd.
When you're sitting there, that's what you got to
do. Super nerd.
Entertaining, informative, and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. Our last month of winter. It's really good, isn't it? We're heading towards spring. The trees are starting to green up a little bit. It's warm where we come from anyway. Good evening, Dr. Ron.
Hello. How are you going this week?
Good. Thank you very much. And Dr. Graham. Well, Graham Callaghan is in this evening. You don't have to be anonymous. He does.
Yeah, but that's, I can be me.
Yeah, that's right. You can be you. Like, I can be me. The mystery of the show. Here's Mr. Anonymous sitting over here. Hello.
I wish I could just be myself.
You could. And then what?
I don't know.
You're the Stig of Tech Talk Radio.
He is a bit, isn't he?
There's that.
I don't wear the helmet, though.
Well, you could.
I need a Stig helmet.
Yeah.
If you hadn't said that, we could have convinced all our new listeners that you were helmet-wearing Stig, because they can't see you on the radio.
This is it. Exactly right. Hello to everybody who's now listening on one of our very fine community stations. By the Community Radio Network.
Lots of them, too.
Absolutely.
So, big welcome to all of our new listeners. We'll give you a bit of a rundown in just a sec about what the show's all about. For those of you who have been listening to us for the past 7 years, you know all about it, and you can come along and visit us live to air when we go live to air on Monday night. So, if it's not Monday night where you're listening to us now, we're not live. I think that works. That covers everything, doesn't it?
I think that explains everything.
Okay. But if you're listening live, chat.techtalkradio.com.au is where you can come and interact with us as the show goes to air.
But if you're listening to us on the community radio stations around the country or on the podcast or any other form of relay around the country, then forum.techtalkradio.com.au is the place to go to have a discussion about the show and what we've talked about.
Absolutely. Like-minded listeners are there too.
And fantastic.
Should we tell them our secret?
What's our secret?
2 hours.
I don't know our secret.
You do.
Oh, there's a two-hour secret.
There's a two-hour version of it, yeah. Get in your podcast if you like, thanks to Graham, who does all of the wonderful hacking and mixing and stuff. A little bit about the show. We're all sort of been in the tech world for many, many years, and it evolved from a beer and pizza night. Here we are today around radio station microphones. We've been doing it for ages and ages. Dr. Ron and I, we frequent the ABC quite a bit. I was supposed to be there today, but that's another story. I'll be there tomorrow instead.
They stood you up.
Oh, look, some poor producer, Kate, bless her cotton socks, omitted in the email that it was tomorrow, not today.
It was a nice apology.
It was
email,
lovely, going,
wasn't it?
Lovely going into the ABC today, and they said, "You're early." I said, "Oh, really?" Anyway, but
knowing a little bit about the amount that goes into producing even a modest little radio program like ours, it's not surprising if you get the odd little detail wrong.
Dear. Yeah, well, so Dr. Ron is in this evening, Graham is in this evening.
That's me.
We have one absentee this evening, Lena Van Deventer, who is our games correspondent, our games guru. She's got a man cold this evening, so...
Well, she'd have a girl cold, wouldn't she?
Well, there's no such thing as a girl cold, is there?
I don't know.
It was always a man cold.
Oh, well.
Anyway.
Whatever it is, she's not
with
well.
Us. She's not with us this evening, so she's home in bed. Hopefully,
hello, Lena, if you're listening.
Yep.
Come back soon. We need your games expertise.
Absolutely. And there's been a bit of gaming stuff happening this week, but our game segment will be held over till the following week, so you'll have to stick around for us there and then.
What, you got a man cold or something?
Yeah.
Righto.
Yeah. Yeah. Where were you?
Where was I?
Funny you were
ask.
Not paying attention
funny,
in the last little bit, were
funny
you, Dr.
Rusk?
Oh, dear.
We're also joined tonight by Adam Turner.
Adam Turner has just walked in the door.
Extra special expert opinion person.
Evening all.
He is. Now, Adam's got a day job like we all do. He writes things. People read about it and comment about it.
Yeah, Adam's one of Australia's leading technology journalists.
You're just saying that because he's walked in the room.
It's been said.
You should have heard what he was saying about you 3 minutes ago.
Yeah.
I'll get that on the podcast.
Yeah, so Adam joins us in this evening. So that's pretty much the crew. We've got Lydia Davis in the United States. She's downtown Palo Alto. And she joins us from time to time when she's not doing biblical events, such as joining up to social networking sites. But I did get a tweet during the week saying that's it. She doesn't want to talk to me anymore because parallels have been drawn. So Lyd's over there. Mark Diggins, who was in last week, he's a network engineer, builds phone networks and stuff like that. So he comes in to, you know, put us all straight when it comes to things like mobile phones and NBNs and stuff like that. So
yeah, he's a real expert on how all these wireless gadgets communicate and mobile phone networks and so on.
So, and I do a bit of broadcasting, I make TV programs and stuff like that. And Dr. Ron, what do you do? We've never quite worked out what you do.
Oh, you know.
You stand by photocopiers most of the time.
We could tell you, but we'd have to kill you.
International man of mystery.
Oh, that's it, isn't it? We called him the Stig before. He's the only anonymous person that we have on our program. Anyway.
Oh, look, I work in telecommunications.
You do.
I've done that for a long time. I work for the state government in Victoria as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that keeps me busy.
You're the one.
Yeah, I'm the one that works.
Anyway, we should get upwards and onwards with our show. We sort of have a bit of a thing now where we read out our correspondence. Dr. Ron normally takes up a fair bit of time, but we're going to pace him up this evening because we've got so much to squeeze in to our first show on the satellite. So, Dr. Ron,
we're going to punch through it.
We are indeed, nice and fast.
And we got so much this week as well.
So many Gmail, G Plus requests.
This there were.
Been sending them out left, right, and centre for listeners.
Firstly, I've got a hello to say to Fee Can. Now, Fee's not in our chat room tonight. She's had some fairly serious surgery recently in hospital.
We need every listener we can get.
We do need every listener we can get. So, Fee, all the best from the Tech Talk panel. We hope that you get well soon. Wish you a speedy recovery and looking forward to seeing you back in the chat room very, very soon.
Here, here.
30th birthday for DOS. Did you read about this?
DOS? No. The disk operating system.
Bill Gates and Paul Allen spent $75,000 on QDOS and began selling sublicenses in 1981.
Wow. I remember DOS.
I remember QDOS,
It's still in Windows 7. Have you hit CMD? Isn't that a DOS prompt?
It's not DOS. Oh, no, it's a command prompt. Yeah.
It's changed a great deal.
Has it?
It's Clayton's DOS. It's the DOS you have when you're not really having DOS.
Yeah, that's right. It's
okay.
IBM was the first customer and received a slightly modified version of MS-DOS 1.0 that was offered as PC-DOS, and it was sold by IBM for $40 back in its day.
Yep.
Wonder what that is in today's currency.
So, happy birthday.
Probably still $40.
DOS disk operating system. Steve via the feedback form. No, it's amazing, isn't it? 30 years. DOS 3.3 was the first one I used.
What happened to 2 and 1? Did they ever come out publicly or were they kept secret?
Oh, yeah. They were around.
I don't remember anything. I'm with Dr. Ron on that.
3.3 was the first one you used. Steve via the feedback form says, "Hi, guys. I love your show. I discovered you earlier this year and kick myself that I didn't find you years ago." Well, we're kicking you too, Steve. "One thing puzzles me. You often talk about slow broadband speeds. Why do you use ADSL? I've been using Optus Cable for about 10 years and upgraded about 6 months ago to their supersonic system." He says that in inverted commas. Must be a product name. "I used to get 8 megabits per second download, but now I get 100 megabits per second. Initially, it cost me $60 per month, but now it costs $75 per month because I also upgraded from a 15 gig per month plan to 150 gig per month."
Graham, do you want this rant?
I've been looking forward to this email being read since I saw it come in on the email earlier on. Because I know that there's people in the studio who used to be subscribers to Optus Cable.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm one of them.
Or me too. There you go. So everybody except me.
Yep.
Now I want to hear what the response is to this, because you used to be on Optus Cable and you jumped ship.
Moved house and the stupid cable isn't in my new street.
Oh, well, that's one good reason.
But that's the whole problem. These stupid cables were rolled out in such a way that a lot of people missed out because they didn't make them share.
Yeah, the Optus,
so, one street's got two and the next street's got nothing. If I had a choice, I'd still be on cable because it's so good.
There are some suburbs that basically said, no, you can't string these big black cables up in the air in Melbourne and Sydney. And I think that's a result of that.
Well, even not, though. Even in the suburbs that do have it.
Mm.
Like I said, it's two in one street and none down the other. A friend of mine lives a couple of blocks from me. She has to get Foxtel via satellite, even though she lives in, well, not quite in a Melbourne, but you know.
within
Metro,
within spitting distance of the Foxtel head office.
Yeah, yeah, and she's on. Actually, you're right, and she's on satellite, so it's ridiculous.
Mm. The reason why I churned, Steve, is because I wanted to do some somewhat technical things with my internet service. I wanted to run servers, and Optus don't let you do that. It's purely a consumer, end user type service. You're not allowed to run businesses. On it, and you're not allowed to run web servers, you can't run mail servers.
That was the same with me. They sent me email saying, you're running a server, if you don't turn it off, we're going to disconnect you. So I helped them along the way.
Yeah, bite me.
But yeah. You guys also used to complain that initially it was very, very fast.
It was.
And as the take-up in your areas increased, the speeds went down.
Yeah, more people like us came along.
It did. Dr. Ron and I used to be able to move stuff between us because we're both on the black cable incredibly fast, and then it all got capped and throttled.
Mm.
And we thought, that's it, it's
and
time to move on.
And the went up and the speeds went down. And
yeah, they oversold the network and so say all of us.
Yeah.
And they messed around with the allowances. You had a lot, and then for a while they cut it right back, and they had this thing where you couldn't use more than 10 times the average user or something like that. So there was a running target that you never quite knew if you could hit, and then they got generous again, and there were the really lean times when they said, right, you're back to 3 gig. And it's like, oh, man, this is going to be tough. And then, you know, after 6 months, I'd have a change of heart and give you 12 gig again. So it was ridiculous.
They did used to kick with the breeze.
Yeah, at least now you know what you're getting. And they're generally not going to move you up and down without telling you or without you changing your plan.
Steve, I hope that explains why most of us, so if not all of us,
range of reasons.
It's not because we technically didn't want to be on the cable.
There's a bit of passion in there.
There is passion.
It wasn't a technical reason, as Adam said.
Well, Adam's nothing if not passionate.
But there is a lesson here for the current political situation with the NBN rollout, in that it was really, really daft having two different competing companies rolling out infrastructure down the streets. That's not where the competition needs to be. The competition needs to be in what's carried over the cables.
Yep.
It's crazy to have competition for cables to you know, individual houses down individual streets.
To duplicate infrastructure.
It would be like having Ford and Holden and Toyota each build a separate road network and say, you can only drive on my roads. It just would make absolutely no sense. You've got to have shared infrastructure, and you've got to compete where it makes sense to compete and not have competition where competition is just pointless.
GC, the voice of reason.
Napo SK via the feedback form says, if you were sad to see the end of the space shuttle program...
I wasn't.
Ooh,
really, Graham?
We're fighting words.
Are you pleased to see the end of it from the point of view if you want to see what's coming next?
Yeah, I'd like to see NASA start actually getting back to doing some science and exploration instead of running a low Earth orbit taxi service.
For big business.
Yeah.
Then give, if you were sad to see the end of the shuttle program, says Napo, then give this little neat little game a go. It's a web-based little game. It's quite cute. Kerbal Space Program. The address is www.kerbalspaceprogram.com.
How do you spell that?
Kerbal Space Program.
Is it an acronym for something, or does it mean something?
Oh, I think it might just be the developer's name. I'm not sure.
Yep.
In KSP, you must build a space-worthy craft capable of flying its crew out into space. At your disposal is a collection of parts, which must be assembled to create a functional ship. Each part has its own function and will affect the way the ship flies or doesn't. So strap yourself in, get ready to try some rocket science. Thanks, Napo. It's a good little game. We'll put that in the show
notes. Exactly. Graham, you started something on the forum. They want to drive on Ford roads.
So, Gareth says, Holden drivers are terrible. I want to drive on the Ford
road. Yeah, okay. Moving on. Yes. Next.
Skeptic here all night. Via the feedback form says, really enjoy the podcast from Sydney, but Google Plus chat each week is frustration. Any chance of an invite? Skeptic, invites in the mail. Consider yourself invited. And we're not all on Google Plus live each week. We tried it the first time, tried that Hangout thing.
Yeah, we brought that to a grinding halt. Yeah.
We've just gone back to our own chat room for now.
The chat's probably the best place to go because that's open to everybody.
Exactly.
So if it's Monday night and you're listening to us, that's where to find us. Ian, via the feedback form, says, hi guys, listen to the program each week on the podcast for the last couple of years since I've been living in Indonesia. It's really good. Hi, Ian. Is it possible for you to send me an invite to
another
Google
one?
Plus?
Yeah,
Ian,
in the mail.
Done. Invitations in the mail. It'll help me keep in touch with friends. Yeah, absolutely, it will. Carl, the regular, via the feedback form, says, Hi, guys. Carl, the regular here. Thanks for another great show. Now, it's not hate mail, but I have to disagree with Adam's view of the Mac Mini.
Oh, timely that he's in tonight,
Carl,
isn't it?
We pulled some strings and we got Adam in specially for you. Let me preface this by saying I'm an Apple fan. We have several iPods, an iPhone, an iPad, and desktop iMac running Lion in the house, and we love them all. But, I could tell there was a but coming there. Mm. I strongly think the decision to remove the optical drive from the Mac Mini is short-sighted and arrogant by Apple. I totally get where Apple is headed with their cloud and iTunes store model, and removing drives from portable devices like the iPad and MacBook Air makes perfect sense. These are intended to be lightweight, powerful, and portable. The Mac Mini is very much a desktop device. It has to be connected to a monitor and keyboard to be of any use. So what's the point in removing the optical drive? The fact is, real people, not cutting-edge techies, still rely heavily on discs like CD and DVD. Just look at most families' collections. The Mac Mini would make the perfect home theatre companion, and fitting a Blu-ray player would have made me part with $700 to Apple. I would have then used that optical drive to rip all my DVDs and CDs. And hey presto, a tiny box to watch all my owned movies and music, Blu-rays as well as streaming and web surfing.
Yeah, but that's not what Apple wants you to do.
It isn't, is it?
If you rip them off the physical media, then Apple doesn't get their cut.
Mm-hmm. My spleen is now vented. Cheers, Carl.
I half agree with you. No, it's not short-sighted. Yes, it is arrogant. It's
yeah.
long-sighted by Apple. It's part of their long-term
It's very,
plan.
Very carefully considered
by
Apple.
They know exactly what they're doing, and they don't care what you want. They don't want you to have what you want. They want you to have what they want you to have, and they don't want you to have a DVD drive. Yes, it's arrogant, but it's not short-sighted. And I think that you will be in the minority because I've written about this online, and like I said, a year or two ago, I think people would have been up in arms about this, but very few people have left comments like your own. It doesn't mean that your opinion isn't valid, but I think you're in the minority.
Like HP Touchbook owners, apparently. But we'll more about that later on this evening, too.
That's all our correspondence for this week, Andrew. Oh. If you'd like to communicate with us, you can. The email address to do so is feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
And lots has been happening this week, which is akin to last week, because there wasn't much really around, was there, Dr. Ron?
Not last week.
No. But anyway, a couple of news tidbits that came in. Foxconn, which is the manufacturer, just because we've been talking about Apple, they're going to replace workers with 1 million robots in 3 years' time. Now, Foxconn's come under a lot of criticism of recent times.
Who is Foxconn,
They're
Andrew?
The manufacturers of iGadgets. Well, not all, but most of the iGadgets in China.
They make the hardware that Apple then sells.
Yeah.
Because Apple doesn't make anything. Apple sells a marketing idea and an image. That's all Apple is an image company.
That's right.
So Foxconn's the production company?
That's right. Yes. And these robots will be used to do simple and routine work, such as spraying, welding, assembling, which are now mainly conducted by workers. So company currently has 10,000 robots, and the number will increase to 300,000 next year and 1 million in 3 years' time.
I hope they're proper robots that walk around and talk and...
Cybermen.
And turn on people.
That's right, yeah.
I know how you think. I could see that coming.
You've watched Blade Runner once too often, I think, Adam.
Also in the Apple News camp, Apple have extended iTunes previews to 90 seconds internationally. So, I don't know whether anyone's gone, yeah, great.
Yeah, I don't really care, but...
Big deal. Right.
Big deal.
From 60 seconds or from 30
seconds? 25 or 30 seconds.
30, I think,
Well, that's nice, but it's nothing to get too excited about.
I wonder how many of the songs on iTunes are actually 90 seconds or under in length.
I wonder how many people would listen to more than 30 seconds anyway.
That's very true. But I think a movie preview could be a little... Do they preview movies?
You get the trailer.
Oh, you do, don't
Apple
you?
Apple has the one of the best trailer libraries, so...
They do.
You don't really need that.
No. So,
I'll tell you what, though. The previews on the iTunes store and especially on Amazon as well are really good if you're running things like Trivia Nights and you want a 10-second clip of a song. I'm sure the copyright police would bash down your door if they knew what you were doing. But if you want 10 seconds of a song
not
for
to mention
a trivia...
APRA.
Yeah. If you want 10 seconds of a song for a trivia question, that's the way to do it. Stick a recorder into your computer. Go to Amazon's the easiest because it plays through a browser. Just record 10 seconds of each song that you want, and there's your trivia round right there.
So when are we coming over for the trivia?
So I hear. It's all theoretical.
That's a bit sneaky, Adam.
I thought it was clever, the friend of mine who thought of it.
Oh, it's clever. It's
very
clever. But sneaky, too.
Clever and sneaky, yeah. Great combination.
Yeah, great combination.
Well, that means that their bandwidth is going to double or triple overnight if people listen to the whole thing.
Well, I reckon...
I still don't think that many people listen to the
whole thing. I reckon Adam's on the money there. Like, that's what radio's for, isn't it?
Yeah.
You use those previews to check that that's the right song before you download it.
Yeah, you listen to the first 10 seconds, go, Yeah, that's the version that I want. That's the Elvis cover, not the... Oh, that's the Elvis exactly. version, not the Fine Young Cannibals version. Click, I'll get it.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
What Elvis song did the Fine Young Cannibals cover?
Oh, Suspicious Minds.
I thought that was just... He was making that up off the top of his head.
No, I wasn't. I was trying to think of one, and that was the first one I thought of, because I was listening to Elvis on Rhapsody the other night over dinner. Yes, the Fine Young Cannibals did Suspicious
Minds.
You've
done extraordinarily well.
If you follow Adam on Twitter, that's Adam_Turner, Friday afternoon, he tweets away his favourite music albums and Friday afternoon listening pleasures.
Some quotes and stuff like that. Yeah. I work from home, so I'm always listening to music, and every now and then I feel like sharing. Now, at least I don't tweet about what I had for lunch.
True.
Yes, I'm talking about you. You know who you are.
Or when you go to the bathroom.
What did we do before Twitter?
Now, all of the panelists' Twitter accounts are on the Tech Talk Radio website.
Even Graham.
For the new listeners this week. And you can go to the Tech Talk website, which is at techtalkradio.com.au, and just follow your nose.
I thought I'd woken up in some freaky parallel universe then when Graham got a Twitter account.
Yes, well, I haven't really been hugely active yet.
No, you're up to 6 tweets. You haven't hit double digits yet.
No, I'm working on it.
Are you?
Yeah.
Oh, the good. Big 10 has to be a good one.
Yeah.
Oh.
No pressure. Yeah. Make sure you put a lot of thought into it.
Also, if you go to the headshots of the people on this program, on the website, down the bottom left there, you'll also see the stats for Google+. So, because someone during the course of the week, I saw an email come in. Do you remember that one, Dr. Ron? Someone saying, why don't you put your Google stats stuff, which was there.
And then they said 30 seconds later, oh, sorry, found it.
Yeah. So you can come along and join us there. Now, while we're talking about Apple, other things at Apple happened. Apple passes Nokia and holds off Samsung to become the world's top smartphone vendor.
That's nothing to brag about. That's like bragging about the fact that you passed a broken down car on the freeway.
Well, they're taking the top billing now, although allegedly saying we're kingpin. And if you look around in a restaurant in any of this great land of ours, chances are you're going to be outnumbered by iGadgets and iPhones to every other device.
You hear more Android devices than ever, though. If you know what the sound, like everyone knows that ping that an iPhone makes.
Yeah.
You hear that ping that an Android phone makes more than ever these days when you're out.
I think I've been going to the wrong spots.
Yeah, no. I mean, I still see more iPhones.
Restaurants. Really?
But the Android is coming on strong, and Android sales were surpassing iOS sales in the US, I think. But everyone...
Yeah, but Android's an operating system, and the iPhones are obviously gadget.
Well, Android phones were outselling iPhones in the US, I think. Mm-hmm. But the figures seem to vary, so it's hard to say. But Nokia's dead in the water because they released they upgraded the Symbian operating system that everyone said was a dud. They went, oh, look, we've improved it, and everyone said it's a dud. And then they went, oh, yeah, you're right, it's a dud. Okay, we're going to switch to Windows Phone 7, but it's going to take a year. Meanwhile, buy one of our phones that we admit is a dud. And then they wonder why they're not selling any phones.
Well, they probably don't wonder, to be fair. They probably know why.
But they've just released an N9 running Mego, which is a flavor of Linux. So I'm keen to have a look at that.
All right. Apple, this is some statistics of three at the top. Apple, in quarter 2, 2010, shipped 8.4 million iPhones. And in quarter 2, 2011, so the same quarter the following year, over double at 20.3 million devices.
You also got to depends on the release cycles as well.
Well,
you can
that too.
Tweak the figures to make, you look at just after an iPhone came out or just when people were waiting for a new Nokia phone to come out, of course it's going to vary. So before I pay too much attention to those figures, I'd want to look at which countries they came from and which products were and weren't on sale when those figures were taken.
All right. This is apparently in the United States. Samsung, big improvement. Quarter 2 was 3.1 million devices. Quarter 2 this year, 19.2. So that's bigger jump than Apple, but yet they're not as many as Apple. Mm. And Nokia or Nokia, whichever way you want to, they're going the other way. Quarter 2 was 23.8 and this year, 16.7. So that's
hardly surprising, as Adam said.
That really just confirms what Adam was saying
situation.
Before.
They're gonna come out hitting strong with the Windows phones when they come. They're gonna have a lot of marketing behind that, no doubt, with Microsoft on board.
Mm-hmm.
And the Nokia name still has that. It still catches the ear of the consumer. I think there's still some value in that brand name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're the biggest nanophone seller in the world. And they're going to continue to dominate the nanophone market, the $19.99 phone that you can drop and flush down the toilet and it'll still keep on working, and it only has 10 buttons on it. All it does is make phone calls.
That's another good point.
Yeah, and that's someone who wants a phone like that, and I'm picking on nanas, sorry, no offense to nanas, but, you know, usually older people who just want to make phone calls, they don't want an iPhone. They don't want to mess around with it. They might not like the touchscreen if they can't see very well. You want something with buttons on it. I push a button, I ring someone, I talk to them, I hang up.
Yeah, there's a lot of that about, but even those sorts of consumers, even I'm finding in the people I talk to, starting to ask the questions. Like, my mum's got a phone pretty much like yours. She's nearly 80 now. She's got, like you were saying, just a phone that makes phone calls. And she's saying to me the other day, can I get the footy scores on this?
Yeah, that's how it starts.
That is how it starts.
Yeah. I want a particular thing. Not, she doesn't care about, can I get Android on this, or can I get iOS? Or
not at all,
get
no.
What she cares about is, there is this thing that I would like. There is this end result that I want. How can I achieve it? But she doesn't care what's under the bonnet.
And it's the same thing with the home theatre system, or the home PVR system, video recording system at home.
Yeah.
It wasn't that she wanted a digital, you know, record to hard disk PVR. She just wanted to be able to watch Days of Our Lives when she was out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, you know, it's that sort of thing that drives this.
And that's how everyone should buy their tech.
Mm.
Decide what it is you want to do and work backwards.
Absolutely.
Don't get hung up on a brand or a product or a spec. Figure out what, like any business project, first decide what you're trying to achieve and then work backwards.
Yeah, buying an iPhone because everyone's buying iPhones is not a good way to make your decision.
Well, exactly.
Particularly buying a BlackBerry because everyone's got BlackBerries is an even worse way to make a decision.
Do you remember when Sheldon leant forward and he had his phone in the top pocket, and when Adam said flushing your phone down the toilet, I just, you know, that wonderful television show.
This is a reference to a show called Big Bang Theory.
That's it. It wasn't Sheldon. It was one of his colleagues who had the phone, and he leant over, and anyway, down it went. So, yeah, it happens. Now, speaking of working backwards, Apple are doing just that. According to the Patents Office in the United States, Apple has patented a keyless keyboard. Think about it.
I was joking about that with someone. Are you serious?
Well, Apple has patented a design for a keyboard with no moving parts, just a glass panel covering a graphical display.
I've got one. It's called an iPad.
Oh, really? There you go.
Why would you want to buy? So they want to sell
this is a big
standalone. That's just stupid. That is dumb. The whole reason why you want a real keyboard is because it's a real. I've used a notebook like that. It's
But you're right.
I think it's an Asus.
It's like the iPad.
It's got two screens on it. No keyboard, just a screen on the top and another screen on the bottom. And the bottom screen is a keyboard that's just a piece of glass. And it's horrible to type on. It's fun to play with. But isn't that an Apple
product fun to play with?
Why is it horrible? Do you lose the accuracy?
Well, it's not as sensitive. And you've got no feedback.
No tactile sort of.
It's horrible typing on glass. You want the keys to move. You want to be able to feel where the keys are. Like, you can't really touch type. Not that I'm a touch typer, you know, but you can't. There's nothing. It doesn't give you anything. You know what I mean? It's just cold piece of glass. It's not nice to use.
What happens?
I think you would struggle to find people who write for a living, not who bash out the occasional SMS, but who
write for a living. Yeah, most people using computers aren't using them to write for a living.
There'd be a lot of trendy graphic designers that go, oh, that's pretty good. I want that.
Because they don't write for a living. Oh, yeah. They design for a living. But you would be hard-pressed to find someone like me who you could hand that to them and then after a day say, do you want your real computer back? And they'd say no.
Yeah.
They'd be begging you.
But as we discussed earlier, you're a passionate person. You like to take it out on the keyboard. I do.
Yeah, a little
bit. You're sitting there and you're going, bang, bang, bang.
It's not just that, though. It's just like a physical keyboard has, I don't know, you have a relationship with your keyboard. It's a give and take sort of thing.
My keyboard's got colour keycaps.
It does. It's very fancy.
It's very nice, isn't it?
Have you got one of those ones that's got a little screen on each keycap so you can change?
No, I've seen them. No. They're cool.
Yeah.
But at least they're still real keys.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Much better than the glass idea.
Yeah.
So you're going to stick to your $2.50 no name brand keyboard, you reckon?
I'd rather do that than type on a piece of glass.
One of my very first jobs in the industry was repairing terminals, you know, connected to mainframes, you know, serial terminals, you know, back in the old days. And one of the most regular parts of this job, apart from changing a particular 220 microfarad capacitor in a particular screen, was resoldering the get your finger off the nerd alert button there, Andrew.
You know you can get this as a ringtone.
I heard it the other day. I was in a cafe and I heard it go up. I am not kidding.
You are kidding.
It wouldn't happen. Anyway,
for everyone who wants to know, our new listeners, that we need to teach them these things, this is what happens. We have a nerd alert.
Nerd alert! Nerd alert!
Oh, behave.
Now that happens if someone like Graham mentions 220 microfarad capacitors. You'll hear that.
It was a very small passing reference. My main comment was that one of my most regular jobs was resoldering the dodgy solder joints underneath enter keys from people who'd learned to type on typewriters and were typing on these terminals.
Bash
on the enter key and breaking the solder joints underneath.
Andrew was concerned I was going to break a keyboard a week or so ago at his office, weren't you? You said, steady up there on the keyboard.
Oh, you're a
passionate typer. Yeah, bang, bang, bang. I said, it's all right, they cost $2.50.
That's right, keyboards are cheap.
They're disposable.
I can't believe you heard that in a cafe, really?
Yeah, I did. I know it's been very big demand. If you Google it, you'll find it. And people have obviously, there's been a lot of downloads. But
I couldn't tell who it was. It wasn't anyone with me, though.
Well, that's probably good, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right, but I must admit, I do like a good keyboard. The solid ones, the ones that are expensive, that really, really solid, they keep going.
The worst things are the cheap and nasty netbooks that flex like a sponge when you type on
them. We were in a shop the other day and Adam showed me his test.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
You can just go along, like, you know, you go into some shops and they have a row of 10 10 notebooks on a bench. Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah. You just push your finger down on the H key and just see if the whole thing
flexes.
And if it goes, because it's like typing on a sponge, it's horrible. If the whole thing goes and comes back up, don't touch it.
Okay.
Not if you're like me and you type for a living. If you're just going to bash out the occasional thing, you might not care. But if you care about your keyboard, that's the first thing you look for. And usually the cheaper and nastier the netbook, the more give there is in the keyboard.
So there you go. Every time you go into your white goods shop to check to buy a keyboard, give the H key a workout and see how it flexes.
I just sent about 100 H's into the chat room. Sorry, everybody. Just testing. Oh, Gareth's done the same thing too.
Oh, yes. Good. Yeah, lots of H's there in the chat room.
Great minds, Gareth.
All right. Other news. The National Broadband Network is about to connect up here in Melbourne. One of the very first mainland connections very shortly.
Yeah, Brunswick. We're sending caffeine all over the country.
About to say, an outer suburb of Melbourne, called Brunswick. You know, I thought the NBN was for people who couldn't connect to high-speed broadband.
No, the reason why they're doing it is they're trialling the NBN in different areas. They're trialling it in remote areas, but also in built-up areas because they want to learn the best way to do it. So Brunswick is inner city, multi-unit dwellings and all that kind of stuff.
So it's not because Brunswick doesn't have it. It could be inner city anywhere.
No, it's not because, it's just because they want to get some practice. Okay, how do we do a high-density population environment? How do we do a mid-density environment? How do we do a regional environment? And that's why they've picked a few test sites to try one of each to learn lessons to then help them when they roll out the rest.
Well, some interesting statistics here. About 1,300 properties have been fitted with fibre to the house. Lucky devils. Oh. There's a lot of envy in this studio over that.
Time to move to Brunswick.
So 1,300 lucky Brunswickians have got that. And as of October this year, they get some light down their bit of glass, which is going to be good. Of 2,600 properties in the Brunswick site, only 52% will be connected to the NBN because the owners of the remaining properties said, no, go away, don't bother us.
I'm glad you mentioned that figure. What's wrong with people? Don't they know that they've got
if you don't get hooked up now, it'll cost you later.
Oh, they've got the most fantastic opportunity available to. They've been just going, no, I'm not sure about that. No, thanks.
They still travel on steam trains to city
centres,
don't they?
Come on, educate people. Oh. Educate yourselves. Now, our illustrious chat room moderator, who's noticeable by his absence tonight, GD.
Had another engagement.
He must have. Jeff, he did actually send his apologies. He couldn't moderate tonight. But he lives in Brunswick, I believe, and he's hopefully signed up to it. And
you lucky, as a Monty Python boy say, you lucky, lucky person.
Lucky person.
Yeah, that's the one. dear. All right, well, that's going to be a bit of fun for those that are in the Brunswick area very shortly.
Well, definitely.
Good luck to you.
Another couple of test sites in New South Wales coming up soon, which is good.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and South Australia and Queensland. So they're being switched on all around the country.
Bring it on. We might take a break. We'll come back with all sorts of interesting things. We've got a few from the couch coming up and some Google news too, just to add cat amongst the pigeons. Back after this.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Good
Google has opted out of Germany now.
But that's not the whole problem.
Lino, help us. You need to come back. All is forgiven.
Yeah, what do you want? I can't deal with this now.
Absolutely.
That's very wrong.
It's very rude.
And obviously pretty good on the batteries too.
Not happy, Jan.
Oh, well. You have nothing here which does not have an Apple on it.
That's the way I like it.
Couldn't even tell whether you were male or female.
No. Frankly, no.
Have you worked out the five-finger fondle yet?
I hate toolbars on browsers.
Yes.
That really drives me insane.
Yes.
That lacks couth as well.
That lacks complete couth.
Graham took umbrage during the week with a ranking system that I developed on the forum.
Should have known that was coming.
A good cabler is worth their weight in gold.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about Apple, shall we?
Yay.
Oh, Apple scandal.
Yeah. Just when I thought I got out, they pull me back in.
Entertaining.
They post some lolcats.
No, they haven't posted any lolcats yet that I've seen.
Informative.
At some point, litigation must come to an end.
Exactly.
Independent.
I'm not queuing.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, welcome back everybody. And don't forget, if you want to hear 2 hour versions of our show and the podcast, subscribe from the webpage. It gets delivered to your listening device of choice.
www.techtalkradio.com.au.
Yeah, we've got all sorts of things there, even free downloads like ringtones to annoy your friends and neighbours. The geek.
You know, if you Google Nerd Alert, it's about the sixth result down on the front page.
I know,
of
it's
Google.
Good, isn't it? Yeah. But I've been trying to come up with one for Luddites, but I think I'd get into a lot of trouble.
Yeah, I can think of some good ones, but I won't.
Yeah. Maybe we'll talk after the show.
Yeah.
So the funny thing with the Luddite one is that the tech savvy person in the family would have to put it on the Luddite's phone, and then the Luddite would not know how to remove the ringtone.
But what happens when the Luddite rings you?
I've heard of that. People on trams and their phone goes off doing stupid things. And then you hear them complaining out loud that their children have changed their ringtone on them.
Sounds like my wife. Yeah, like, she does that.
It was cats having a fight or something, and this woman realised it was
classic.
Her phone.
Yeah. Classic.
I always change the wallpaper on my mother-in-law's Nokia phone whenever I get the chance when she's not looking. I take a silly photo of myself. And she always yells at me because it takes her an hour to change it back again.
Grab someone's phone after they've had a few drinks and change the language to Korean.
That's cruel because unless you know the exact
because you don't know exactly where to find it.
That's right. If you can't get it back to English, then you're screwed.
That's real
nasty.
Oh, no.
When I used to have those Nokia phones, I used to always memorize the menu sequence. So it was menu 6255 or whatever it was.
So if someone did that to you,
you could
return
it, back
it to English.
Yeah. Because I used to hang around the kinds of people that would do that sort of thing, yeah.
What are you trying to say, Graham?
Well,
another good laugh. What happened to a client of mine is, you know when you install a printer onto a network or something like that for the very first time?
PC load letter.
And it asks you what language you want to use?
Yes.
A non-English language is always a bundle of fun because when people go to print on their...
Most of the time for the things it says, yeah.
What, your ink is running out, please replace your ink cartridge.
Yeah.
What else do you see?
Oh, what on earth is PC load letter?
That's right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, anyway. Hey, before we let's move on, shall we? Google, you know them, don't you? Them's that
are doing all sorts of really big
things at the moment.
It's a little search engine company.
You mentioned in the news.
Yeah, world's biggest advertising company.
Correct.
Yeah, that's where they get their revenue from, and don't you deny it. Bigger than anyone else. You know the streetcars? They're at it again. They're going to drive around Australia very shortly, so you can
Funny you should say that. I was looking at the street view outside my house.
Has it changed?
And it's changed.
It's been recently updated.
It's been recently taken another photo, and there's no longer a mystery person coming out the door.
Yeah. My house has changed as well. It was about more than 3 years old.
And how's the res? I haven't looked at mine.
It's better.
Thinking.
Yeah.
Well, the res isn't much better over my place, but it's clear because I'm not that far from a new housing estate, so it's very easy to tell how old the photo is.
Ah.
All right. Well, yes, you might see these little cars with their little cameras driving around in the not too distant future around Australian suburbs, Australian countryside areas, regional areas, doing all what the Street View does best. So,
sniffing your Wi-Fi?
Sniffing your Wi-Fi.
Yeah, Georgia in our chat room says, hide your Wi-Fi. Yeah.
Keep out of those places where you don't want to be photographed for the next few months and you should be pretty good.
You idiot. If your Wi-Fi isn't all... Are you fading me out?
No.
If your Wi-Fi isn't already secure, you're an idiot anyway. Get your Wi-Fi secure.
But they sniff the... They write down the names of the network, even if your Wi-Fi
is
secure.
Well, what's wrong with that?
Nothing.
If you've got SSID broadcast on, then that's what it's for.
Because that's how Skyhook works. there's an international map of Wi-Fi networks. So if you don't have GPS in your phone, it can look at the wireless networks that you're on and say, I think you're here. And it works at my house.
Yeah.
So clearly someone somewhere has come past and written down the names of my wireless network sometime in the last 3 years since I moved house.
Yeah, well, that's all right.
Apple's now building their own so they don't have to pay Skyhook anymore.
Because when you set up your wireless network at home, you left the box ticked that said broadcast SSID.
Yes, I did.
Yeah. I do. It comes in handy.
It does, and that's what it's for. So,
I don't have a problem with them doing it.
No.
What does SSID stand for, Graham? You have people out there going, what does SSID
mean? SSID is like the network name for a wireless network, and it stands for...
It could be something like our house, the kitchen... free Wi-Fi here.
You see some really funny and rude ones sometimes.
You do. If you're not careful and you're driving around, you'll see some very interesting...
Be very careful if you're somewhere like the airport and you see one that says, free Wi-Fi here, because it could quite possibly be some dodgy person two rows back looking to steal passwords.
Even if you know that the network name that you're looking for at the airport is, Melbourne Airport, for example, then... there's nothing to stop someone else setting up their own access point that also says Melbourne Airport. So
exactly.
You do have to be very careful when you're on public Wi-Fi networks. It stands for Service Set Identifier, but it's really just a fancy way of saying network name. It's the name of the wireless network you're connecting to.
Mm. The interesting thing about this new...
And if you want to annoy your neighbours, just create the same network neighbourhood as they have. That's really good for a laugh.
The new higher res Google imagery was actually taken... 12 months ago or 18 months ago when they had that big Wi-Fi scandal. So they're just only now making it available.
I see.
So when they went through the big hacking scandal they pulled the Street View cars off the road and they said, oh, we're not going to do anything until we investigate this and find out what's actually happened.
It's funny
and
you should mention that.
They never actually put that imagery online.
When you post a picture now on, say, Google+, it has a best guess at where you were at the time that it was doing it. Now, is that using the Wi-Fi information or wireless network type sort of information to do?
If it's got wireless network information available to it at the time, it will use that if it's helpful. But it also uses your IP address, which is the number associated with your computer on the internet. And it can also use GPS information if that's available and if it's useful.
Because I took a photo on my handset and uploaded it the other day, and it was about a kilometre out from where I was.
Yep.
So it's still fairly broad, so I didn't mind too much.
Done a best guess off the
phone network.
Phone network or something.
Yeah, about a kilometre out would be using the mobile phone towers.
Okay.
That is incredibly high-res, Graham, isn't it? Graham's just looking at the front of his place
We're talking about Street View, actually. I haven't checked Street View near my house. I was thinking of Google Maps. Google Maps has been updated recently, and Google Maps has changed for my suburb. But I'll have a look, because, again, my car's now in the driveway on Google Maps. Before it was the last person who lived there's car, so I'll check Street View.
Have they blocked out your number plates? Because
they said they would.
From the air, so I don't know. I'll have a look.
Okay, have a look on Street View. Before they put any of the Street View images up online, they, like all of the hundreds of thousands of millions of photographs that they take with those cars, they look at every one individually. A human looks at each and every one, and they deliberately pixelate out the number plates. They pixelate out people's faces. So before that's done, it's not actually put online until that's actually been done. Graham's just looking at a car parked at the front of his place. Very, very good detail and high-res image, and it has got the number plate.
The number plate is blurred out
very deliberately.
Yep, there's my car in the driveway. It's my old car, but it's still my car.
I was just having a look in the chat, and Georgia in there said, my SSID is Shut Up Sally, which is the next-door neighbour's kid's name.
On a good relationship with your next-door neighbours, Georgia, are you?
We could do something here. People send in the funny SSIDs that you got. We'll read them out on the radio. The ones that we can.
An SSID competition.
Yeah, my friend's got a few great ones, but I can't read them out on the radio.
That's the problem, isn't it? All right. So, Google is basically, Google Australia has revealed it's going to commence redriving operations to update Australia. And the internet giant said that it had also updated the service with high-quality images, as you guys have observed. Obviously, they're out doing more. So if you haven't gone high-res yet on Street View, it's probably only a matter of time, wherever you are around Australia.
Yeah, this definitely looks a bit sharper around my house from what I remember the old one looking like.
My car was out the front last time. Too. We're going to have to check.
You can see the red trolley in the back of my car there.
Yeah, I can see my license plate, and it's been blurred.
Okay.
Now, what country do you live in?
Start this, you two.
Registration plate.
Oh, don't start me.
Here we go. It's not a license plate.
Do you want to have this fight again?
It's not a license plate.
Google offers to rewrite the web to make it faster. I thought this was quite humorous too. Because
just as a courtesy.
It might work for CityLink. They've lost.
Yeah, I'm trying to fend off an argument. I've had that argument with them too.
Oh, is this the right radio station for an argument?
Correct. Google has offered to speed up the web.
He nearly snotted me last time we were on the show together too.
Yeah, it was touch and go.
Sorry, Andrew, go on.
Have another go, Andrew.
The car park after the show is quite interesting.
it gets very feisty.
It does indeed. Yeah. Google has offered to speed up the websites by rewriting them and serving them through their own content delivery network. That's very nice of Google, don't you think?
Yeah, nothing suspicious going on
No, just a
community service announcement.
The page speed service could speed load up times by 25 to 60%. According to the search engine giant.
And advertising revenues by, I don't know, 80%.
Yes.
Well, you get more clicks per second. It's got to be good, surely.
By replacing the original ads with their own.
Yep.
And adding their own ads into it.
And doing their own analysis and stuff too.
Absolutely.
And data mining.
Very good.
Just quickly, I wanted to mention...
Very quickly, I'm about to press play.
An alternative to Google Maps, which in my opinion is better, much better aerial imagery than Google Maps, is Nearmap.
It is good, isn't it?
Nearmap.com. You have to sign up there, give them an email address and a password, but it's worth doing. It's amazing quality.
And they use aerial photography rather than satellite photography.
Correct. Much, much sharper. It looks really good.
Adam Turner, who joins us on a regular basis in a segment called View from the Couch, who is actually in the studio this evening.
Sorry, I'm just looking in my neighbour's windows.
He came in off the bench this evening, and now he's a voyeur. but nonetheless...
Here's something he prepared earlier.
Here's something he did prepare earlier about Hewlett-Packard devices.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch.
The HP touchpad has landed in Australia, running WebOS picked up in the Palm acquisition. But can this new gadget make headway in a sea of tablets? HP unveiled its new iPad rival to the Australian media last week, and it was met with a resounding, "Yeah." Anthony McMahon, Vice President of HP WebOS, took to the stage to sell the touchpad's virtues, but what we saw was yet another also-ran which failed to distinguish itself from strong competitors such as Apple's iOS and Google's Android Honeycomb. The Wi-Fi-only HP touchpad comes in 16 and 32 gig models, selling for $599 and $699 respectively. There's talk of 3G models in the future. At 9.7 inches, it basically looks and feels like an overgrown BlackBerry Playbook, but thankfully without RIM's frustrating restrictions such as the Playbook's initial lack of a non-BlackBerry mail client. The interface has a lot in common with RIM's tablet OS, although to be fair, it's probably RIM which borrowed more from WebOS. WebOS's list of features includes the usual suspects such as multitasking, multi-touch, flash, HTML5, and universal notifications. As for hardware, there's micro USB, but no USB host, no SD slot, no HDMI, which means no screen mirroring for road warriors looking to run presentations. The touchpad has a Snapdragon dual-core 1.2 GHz processor under the monitor and a gig of RAM, but you wouldn't know it based on the sluggish hands-on performance. Honeycomb is far smoother when running on similar specs. HP's McMahon kept throwing around the word unique, but could offer very little to back it up. Things didn't turn ugly, but he copped a few brutally honest questions such as straight out, "Why would I buy one?" from down the back. "The way you interact with this device is unique," we were told. Although we didn't see anything groundbreaking, the best McMahon could offer was Just Type, a universal search feature which also lets you type a sentence and then decide what you want to do with it, such as create a note or post it to Facebook. Possibly handy, but not enough to declare "works like nothing else," which is part of the tablet's catchphrase. McMahon also spruiked the benefits of HP Synergy, which combines mail, contacts, calendar and social media in the one app, with APIs for third-party integration. Of course, every Android vendor offers something similar, and even Apple is getting in on the act with Twitter integration. Of course, today's tablets are as much about the ecosystem as the device. McMahon tried to paint a bright picture of a WebOS ecosystem, but again, he failed to impress. There are around 8,000 WebOS apps in the App Store, although only around 300 are designed for the larger tablet interface. All the rest are for small WebOS phones. Now, we were promised that WebOS would be across many devices, such as desktops and notebooks, but he couldn't provide details as to whether this would be a dual boot environment or a Windows app. We're even told it might be on printers, but I'm not sure why we should really care. More importantly, McMahon couldn't provide a timeline as to when we'd see WebOS phones in Australia, even though he was using one already.
It's hard to find a good reason to get excited about the touchpad. Apple fanboys already have the shiny iPad, power users have Android, and corporate types can choose from those or look into the playbook. With no killer feature to capture the imagination, I think HP's touchpad will have a tough job of winning people away from the competition. I'd say you'll be unique if you own one.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
I'm unique, but I don't have
but
one of those.
Not necessarily in a good way.
Yes, yes, we're all individuals.
That's the one. So it was a fun session, the HP
presentation
land,
wasn't it?
Didn't get
as nasty as a Nokia N8 launch. But, that got
talking out of school here?
Yeah. But, there was a very blunt down from down the back, why would I buy one? And they just
how many people were there?
Great answer.
This was in Sydney.
This was in Sydney. This was on Tuesday morning I went to that, and then Tuesday afternoon I went to AMD's launch. There was
just a junket.
30, junket. 40 people. It wasn't a junket.
Wasn't it?
Was it a trip.
Okay. Oh, okay.
I'm going to launches. You get a bit of food, but it's not exactly a luxury trip.
You wouldn't be traveling the distance just for the sandwiches, would you?
No. I read your tweets. I know how much you love Sydney.
Yeah, I do too.
maybe 30, 40 people off the top of my head, but no one seemed to, didn't seem to take anyone's breath away.
Okay.
If there was no Android, if there was no nothing else, if this was the only alternative to the iPhone, to iOS devices, you go, yeah, this looks cool. But the way I see it, I think that's what I just said, is, fanboys have got the iPad, techies have got Android, business users have got the playbook. Well, I don't see quite where this fits, and they really didn't do a good job of convincing anyone where it fits either.
Oh, another one for the history books, I suspect.
We'll see. I'd be really surprised if it takes off. They'll have to come out with something pretty special.
Okay. And during, of course, that we all checked our houses on on Street View. Yes, it has gone high def in some major centre, our street in particular. And lovely photo of my wife's bottom there on Street View. For those of you who know where I live, off you go.
I'm surprised you're brave enough to say that on here.
It comes back in strange ways, a bit like Chinese whispers in our house.
I was looking in my neighbour's windows. I couldn't see anything interesting.
Now, really?
Now, in fairness, your wife is gardening, I think.
Yeah, she is gardening.
Yes.
At the time.
That's what they call it.
It must have been a Saturday or a Sunday.
Something agricultural anyway.
Maybe that's evidence. Ooh, there we go. I'll go and check there later and see what's there.
Oh, dear.
All right. Optus bidding for home phones with femtocells. Now, Mark talked about femtocells last week.
He did.
So, and these things are basically network wreckers for networks that don't have quite enough resources to put good mobile coverage.
Well, he said they can be.
Am I paraphrasing?
You are a little bit, okay.
All right.
I thought Mark was really good. I listened to that bit.
Oh, did you? Good. Yeah, he knows his stuff when it comes to all this sort of thing. But the femtocells...
For those who don't know, femtocells are a little tiny cell for your cell phone, for your mobile phone, that you set up in your own house if your house is in a black spot.
But then it connects out through
phone,
the internet.
Yeah, so you've got mobile phone coverage at home. Yeah, but and as Adam says, they make their connection to the phone network through your internet connection, so you end
up... They get a double whack.
Yeah.
Not only do they get you call costs, they also get you on a contract for data usage and, yeah.
But for our rural listeners who are listening to Tech Talk Radio for the first time this week, this might be ideal. It might be a fantastic solution for
some people. It'll be awesome.
Well, that's just it. If you are on a remote property...
And you don't have any mobile phone coverage now at all...
You're probably not with Optus.
And you're out there by... Yes, correct. You wouldn't be with Optus. But if you're out there and you're
you've got very, very patchy mobile phone coverage, this might be the answer for you.
And especially if you've got NBN coming past your house, be perfect.
It's a little box like a modem or a router, and it connects to your internet, and it provides a very, very localized, like Graham's saying, very localized mobile phone cell that can operate in and around your house.
But the other way of looking at it is this is Optus asking us to pay to do their job.
Well, that's true. Yeah, absolutely.
If they built their network properly,
you wouldn't need these. That's right.
For some people, these are going to be a great solution.
Yeah, but as you said, Ron, some people out in the countryside just don't get mobile coverage because they might be in a creek dip or something.
They wouldn't be with Optus then. They'll be on Next G.
Yeah,
well, they mightn't be on anything.
They're not on anything.
Yeah, they might have a mobile phone that they can use when they go into town, but by the time they've got back to their property, they don't have coverage on anything.
Are there any restrictions from Optus as to where you're allowed to use?
No. Not that I've got here in front of me, but...
So you could be out in the middle of the Simpson Desert or, I don't know, somewhere where there's no mobile coverage and you'd still be allowed to use it.
You may only be able to plug it into Optus internet.
No,
that might
I don't
be a restriction.
Think so.
No?
No, I don't think so, but I think
you'd have to ask.
Data might... Yeah, I double-checked this. I think the data might be unmetered if you're with Optus, but I think it works with any internet service.
All right. Well,
you'd have to double check.
If you're that far out the middle of nowhere, then you're not going to have a decent internet connection either.
Well, just yes, that's very true, isn't it, Graham? The device is available now at the and obviously if this femtocell, which Optus is selling, is capable of 12 simultaneous users. And you're looking at around about 200 kilobits per second of bandwidth. Now, is that a lot, Graham? That's not really that much, is it? That's like a Skype connection. If not, maybe a little more.
No.
Yeah,
it's a lot more than a Skype connection.
Honestly, is that 200 kilobits per call?
Per connection.
Yeah, good luck getting 12 on it at once.
Yeah.
You might get them on, but good especially luck hearing the person on the other end.
Yes.
I'm on a plane.
Hello, breaking up.
I'm on a plane.
Where are you? They've got them on plans, and you can buy the device outright. $240 outright if that's what you want. So
normal.
Check out your local Optus shop if you want to have a look at a femtocell. Could be good in the countryside.
Normal uplink on ADSL 2 is 1 megabit per second. So if they're 200 kilobits per channel, then you've flooded your link on the fifth call.
You have.
And that's assuming you're not using your link for anything else.
That's exactly right, yeah.
Do the maths.
So, and if you're on a less than ideal connection, it's not syncing at full speed, which is likely to be the case if you're in an area that's got poor mobile coverage. You might have an area that's got poor...
Really, this is for people who have no choice but to be with Optus.
Yeah.
You might have an Optus work phone, you can't change it, you have terrible Optus coverage at home, this makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that's true.
If you live in a cave. Coverage is so bad that you need one of these things, the smarter thing would be to ditch Optus and move to whoever has good coverage where you need it.
Absolutely.
Which... more likely than not will
everywhere
be
you need it, mind you.
Yeah. No, I didn't say, but sometimes it won't be Telstra. I know people who have great Optus reception and no Telstra reception.
Oh, yeah.
Depends on where you live. But buy the network that works best where you need it. Don't try and use something else and then try and pay more money to fix it.
All right. Good luck, everybody. But there's a lot of questions that need being asked at your local rep, and I think there's been a few questions
also,
asked here.
Do your own research. Don't expect the people in the shops to know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
I'm not picking on just Optus. I'm picking on a lot of them. They either don't know and they don't know that they don't know, or they do know that they don't know and they don't care and they just tell you whatever you want to hear to get a sale.
You can one way that listeners to our show could get some straight information if you're not sure if you're being spun a line by a salesperson is to hit the forum and start a thread there about what you've been told and what you're thinking about doing.
Yeah, do that.
You'll probably get some much more reasonable advice and suggestions.
Another place to look would be Whirlpool.
Whirlpool would be
another. You'll find a lot of people talking about this there, and you'll find people. They won't all be right, but at least you'll see a range of ideas and it'll give you a bit more of an idea of the questions you need to be asking.
Whirlpool's a fantastic resource for... It's an Australian forum specifically for broadband users, but it's expanded out to cover a lot of technology issues as well, including mobile phones and all kinds of other gadgets as well. And the address for that is Dr. Run.
Whirlpool.net.au.
Don't go to .com.au. You get washing machines.
That's right.
Unless you want to buy a washing machine. Yes, we do a lot of things on this program, but we don't sell washing machines.
So the Whirlpool forums and the Tech Talk Radio forums, two great resources for...
especially because this is all new.
...for more information. Yeah, that's right.
These are very new devices, and not many people are using them, so ask a lot of questions before you get in there. Otherwise, you might end up with a yellow lemon.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not into fruit and veg either. Did you know that the police arrested a truckie, the evil truckie, over the network hack?
More information?
Well, I think you talked about it in the news.
Oh, the network hack.
Yes, evil was his handle, I think you said.
Yes.
His handle being his internet name.
Yeah. Yes.
Now, he was an unemployed truckie, and basically he wanted to work in IT, and he didn't have a job for whatever reason, so he decided to conquer the internet and find his way into one of the IT companies. I can't remember its name off the top of my head.
Well, it's alleged that he's committed computer trespass offences against an ISP called Platform Networks.
That's the ones.
Now, the reason why it was such a big brouhaha in the media was that Platform Networks is one of a few companies which is connected to the National Broadband Network at this point in time.
But what, he only had access, could he bring the network down, or why was it such a scary thing? Because it's like having, these are the pipes, like the water pipes that connect houses and things. Or did he have access to servers which were in the middle of the pipe, so to speak?
Well, we don't have enough information from the federal police, and I'm sure that their investigation is still continuing at this point. But it sounds to me like a bit of a storm in a teacup. Like, it doesn't matter whether it was done on the NBN or whether it was done via ADSL on a telephone line or whether it was done via satellite or whether it was done by a dial-up modem. Who cares? This is what he's done, and he's gotten into their systems, and he's been arrested, and he's been charged.
This guy is not accused of the distribute IT attack.
No.
This is a different matter.
I haven't looked into this very closely, and when I first heard it, I thought he must be accused of doing the distribute IT attack. Now, I'm really keen to know the motives behind the person who did that.
Now, just as a recap on that, sorry, Graham, that was a malicious attack, physical break-in, smash.
Well, no, not physical break-in, but they hacked into an ISP and actually destroyed all the header data and all the hard drives and wiped everything out and wiped out all the backups as well, all the backups as well.
Of a Melbourne hosting company.
It was designed to wipe them off the face of the earth. It wasn't just a hack. It was a... Yeah, they went out of business. They had to sell it.
Net Registry bought them, or what was left of them.
But this was the equivalent of a Molotov cocktail through the front window.
Yeah, not nice. Not nice.
But the link that you're making, Adam, I have seen that link as well, that this guy Evil's been linked to distribute IT attack, and I've seen it linked in a couple of places. But I'm not sure whether it's people that are making a link that's not there.
Can't believe everything you read on the internet.
I think we'll have to wait and see what this person is and is not charged with.
Yes.
Just checking with my lawyer.
Sorry.
There's a lot of head nodding going on here in the studio this evening.
There's a lot we can't say.
Absolutely. Everything's allegedly here.
No, I think that the fuss was all because the platform networks is connected to the National Broadband Network. And there aren't many companies that are. Like, there's hundreds of thousands of ISPs in the country that are connected to the internet. There's only 13 that are connected to the NBN at the moment.
There are certain parts of the media who are looking for any reason to write a negative NBN story.
A beat up.
Yep.
Speaking of, I was very impressed with eBay during the course of the week. They drew the federal authorities' attention to a man who'd bought an unusually large amount of,
Viagra?
Shall we say, pyrotechnics online. I think it was also regional Victoria. I think this happened as well. And
Yes.
They said eBay, obviously...
He's stocking up for cracker night.
Yeah, that's right. He said he was just making them for crackers, but apparently he had enough for a lot of crackers. So it's good to see that, you know, some companies such as eBay are being good, you know, commercial and corporate citizens, really.
They may not be obligated to do that.
No, exactly.
Some other retailers probably are, the same way that your chemist is obligated to tell somebody and buy 400 boxes of Sudafed. They want to know about it.
You can't do that anymore, can you?
No, you can't.
No, they fixed that.
Damn it.
I don't want 400 boxes. I just want one. I really miss my Sudafed.
But
particularly last week.
eBay's probably not obligated to do this, but it is interesting that they've done that. The only problem then is that one would hope that they have a clear and transparent policy on how they do this, because what are they then going to start dobbing me in for? Do you know what I mean?
Well, what are you worried about?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. But there might be things I'm buying on eBay that I don't want everyone to know about that aren't technically illegal.
I thought that rocket launcher, you'd stepped over the line there.
Don't buy them in quantity then, Adam. It's as simple as that.
All I'm saying is that I would hope that eBay is not just winging it and actually has a policy in place. And that goes for any organization. When you're dealing stuff with this like this, you can't make it up as you go along because you get yourself into trouble. You've got to have a clear policy.
In our chat room, Dr. Evil's getting a good run for his money there. Warlock, remember that great mini-me, you know, $1 million. Yes. I remember that. That was a great show, that. Do you remember, boys?
How did they get onto Doctor? They have their own little world there in the chat room.
They run their own show.
That's good.
We're just the sideshow.
It was a great... That was Austin Powers.
It was.
Yes.
One of those wonderful shows. Let's talk about Facebook or social networking in general, but let's start off with Facebook.
Okay.
Did you know that Randy... is Mark's sister, Randy Zuckerberg.
Now, when you say Facebook and Mark, we assume you mean Mark Zuckerberg, one of the founders of Facebook.
That's right. Well,
Randy Zuckerberg.
Randy Zuckerberg, right. Facebook's marketing director, has a fix for cyberbullying, which is an interesting one, which I think it's worth putting out there into the world in general.
I already don't believe it.
To stop, what do you mean?
Yeah, I'm waiting to hear it, yeah.
Well, to stop people from doing anything online improperly... whether it be grooming or anything nasty when it comes to, you know, what some people do.
Yeah, child safety.
They're all behind removing anonymity from the internet. So I'm interested to hear what your thoughts are about how, whether or not there is a place to be completely anonymous. So anything you put on Facebook has your name IP address, whatever identifying factors stamped all over it when you publish these.
That's interesting because Facebook is that place where it's the one place on the internet where you do use your real name, with the exception of Dr. Ron here.
Some of us do.
Yeah. Most people's Facebook accounts are their real name, whereas a lot of the other places on the internet, they have a separate identity.
That's why I don't understand people are so stupid as to do things like deface web Facebook pages and using their own account and then wonder why they get caught.
I'm almost certain that I'm in breach of Facebook's terms and conditions.
You are,
because Facebook
requires all members to use their real names and email addresses when joining the network.
But it's one of the very few places on the internet where that applies.
You might get cut off, Dr. Ron. Who's this doctor character? They've probably heard of you, actually. Mark could listen. You never know.
Randy might be listening to the podcast, and she might cut me off now.
Yep. Anyway, the policy obviously has been fairly difficult to police.
Oh, has it?
Funnily enough.
Really? That's why I haven't got the email yet.
But it's also that Eric Schmidt, who was Google's former CEO, also made the same suggestion. So obviously people in high places are really pro, making sure that everyone is accounted for online.
It's an interesting idea, but it'll never catch on.
Yeah, it's a tough one because there are pros and cons to anonymity online. Being anonymous makes people brave jerks. I know, I write blogs for a living. I get comments from people who wouldn't say some of the things they say if they had to put their name on it. But there are times when anonymity is important, and I think those times, the importance of those times probably outweighs it.
Mm-hmm. I agree, yeah.
All right. Facebook also offering a $500 bounty for reporting bugs in their software. So if you find a exploit or something in the social network's vast website, then they'll give you $500.
People seem to think $500 was a bit stingy.
Yeah, exactly right. Because when the other guys...
for a bug report?
Well, if it's proven conclusive, I guess, $500.
I'd be paying the developers $500 an hour to be doing that sort of work, wouldn't they? To be fixing bugs, identifying
problems. To get a bug report from a user, that's just run-of-the-mill.
Yeah, but whether it leads to anything is the million-dollar question.
Interesting point. Notice that we are using the word bug in terms of a computer system in its correct context here, as opposed to the way most people out there seem to be using it these days. A bug is not a virus. A bug is an error, a programming mistake.
Don't you hate that? People say, well, my computer's got
a bug. Yeah, no.
It doesn't have a bug.
A bug isn't something malicious. A bug isn't a virus.
My PC has the club.
Or a Trojan or some piece of malicious software. Yes, a bug in computer terms is a programming error, a little mistake. So if you click on a button that says contact us and you get the about us page instead, then that's a bug. It's an error. It's a little mistake.
Do you know the history of bugs and computers? How far it goes back?
I think you're about to service up an urban myth here, Andrew, but carry on anyway.
Humour me this. It goes back allegedly to US military days.
Yes.
Where there was an issue and there was an actual bug in the gauge of a piece of test equipment. And they said, it's got a bug in it.
I've heard at least four different versions of this story.
And that's where it goes. It stems way back to the,
the version that I heard was that it was a tiny little insect in a hard disk.
Yeah.
And the hard disk stopped working.
I've heard a version of a tiny little insect in relay contacts.
Oh.
Yeah, that's the one I heard. Yeah.
So
I've heard that one too.
But the way we use the term bug, you wouldn't say you had a bug in a relay. You'd say the relay was...
No, it's a programming error. All these origins of the term bug, I think, are... urban folklore, they're not... I'm sorry, Andrew.
No, that's all right. It's good. I was living the dream there for a moment.
Yeah,
we'll move on.
I
know. Oh, dear. Laugh.
How's your Plus going?
Plus Google is good. Plus. Yes, Plus One.
For those of you who aren't familiar, there's a new social network competitor out there in the marketplace run by none other than Google, who have called it Plus. Now, the difference between Google Plus and Facebook is operability from a first impression sort of...
Yeah, Facebook works and Google Plus doesn't yet.
Well, to a degree. There's a whole lot of strange things been going on, like the unannounced banishings.
Google Plus has got bugs.
Yes.
But it's because of the stage it
is in. Whereas Facebook is a virus.
Oh, no.
That's a discussion topic all in itself.
Your angry letters.
Not only is Facebook... Well, it's a virus. It spreads by...
Social infection.
By social infection. That's right. Yeah, people insist that you join Facebook. to be a friend of theirs on Facebook. That's how it spreads.
You've got a Facebook page.
Yeah, and that's how I got it.
I'm your friend.
Yeah.
Someone made it for him, probably.
No, I was coerced into creating one.
Were
you? But also, Facebook is a platform for viruses. Every single application on Facebook spreads virally. You know, you get sent a sheep or a flower or goodness knows what, and you have to join in the game, and you have to install the app to do it.
Can I suggest that you're hanging out with the wrong people, Graham?
Yeah.
If you hang out with us, you won't get anything like that.
Why do you think I don't maintain my Facebook page?
We won't throw sheep at you.
No, promise.
We might poke you, but we won't throw sheep at you.
A duck has wandered in your yard. Would you like to help them? Your friend needs help in their cafe or help someone get this or is looking for love or whatever. Go away. Leave me alone.
Very true.
The good thing is you can just block those things.
Just click on the little cross and just say...
But you don't have to block the person.
That's
right. You can block the app.
Block this app.
I was thrilled when I learned that. Look up computer bug on Wikipedia and you'll find all about the bug.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Is it truthful?
I have a photo of it.
Oh, even better.
From
so what was it?
A moth in a computer at Harvard.
Oh, there you go. Yes. Was it an instrument? I heard it was a Navy, but obviously it's a computer in Harvard.
Look it up on Wikipedia. Okay. We won't retell it.
Yeah, because everything on Wikipedia is true.
I looked on Snopes and Snopes said that Wikipedia had it right.
Oh, okay.
That's good enough for
Snopes,
me.
I believe.
There you go.
Watch Snopes.
Snopes.org. Yeah.
Urban Myths.
Before you ever pass on an email from anyone that says, you know, if you forward this to 10 people, then the fairies will grant your wish sort of thing.
Or one of these ones that says, if you've got an icon on your computer that looks like a funny bear, then delete it immediately.
Anything
those
like
sorts
that.
Of things. Forward this to everyone in your address book.
Yeah.
It's the new virus. Got to be careful of it.
Google it first to see if it's real. And more often than not, Snopes is the place to go. Snopes.com.
Yeah.
Yes.
That could be a website
and
of the week, right?
Like a, it's sort of like an urban legend busting site where they list these are the stupid things that people say. These are the ones that are wrong. These are the ones that are right. So before you forward that dumb email on to all your friends, check it first. And 99 times out of 100, they're not correct.
No, I apologize. I said the wrong address before. The one that Adam said is correct. Snopes.com. Snopes.com.
Cool. You learn something every day. Anyway, Google Plus, a few little issues. Don't forget, it's just today, actually. It's 1 month old. Did you know? Or 1 month to the public. Well, people like
Google
us
Plus.
Have been allowed in. Yeah, yeah. It's already
to
got
get back on topic, yeah.
Well over 20 million users, probably got 30 by now.
Yep.
At this rate, it'll be fairly sizable in a short term, which means it'll really give their servers a bit of a run for its money. But I guess having used it for a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, however long we've been on it now, I must admit, I'm quite enjoying the huddles. Dr. Ron and I have been huddling together. It's a very manly thing to do.
Been hanging out.
A manly huddle.
A bit of a huddle, yeah. And if you're into gridiron, it's not like that. Or, no, what's the other one? The rugby up north?
The thug ball, whatever it is, yeah.
Thug ball.
Scrum.
We will get letters this week. Yeah, scrum. That's the word
scrum.
I'm looking for, where people do, you know, shoulder to buttocks type sort of stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. What are we talking
You're
about?
You're really a man for all occasions, aren't you?
What were we talking about?
Yes. We're talking about Google Plus. Big difference between Google Plus and Facebook. Google Plus has circles.
It does.
So
circles
you can
of
separate
friends.
The, you don't have to have your worlds colliding.
You can do that in Facebook. It's just not as easy.
Yeah.
So
that's
yeah.
right. I was talking about huddles. That's where I got awfully distracted there.
Circles.
Have you been in a huddle, Graham? You should come along. It's pretty good.
Come and hang out.
Yeah. All right.
It says Dr. Ron's hanging out and Andrew's hanging out.
It's okay. Another social virus
over here.
It's coming
it's
to
right.
get you, Graham. They're coming to infect you.
Come and hang out and I'll throw a sheep at you. It's
Dr.
Really
Ron
good.
Made me put a web camera in my computer the other day so he could see me and I could see him.
I see.
It was scary stuff. And also the other thing too is...
and then you put gaffer tape over the lens to protect your privacy again.
No, you just turn it around so you can see the wall. It's the way
that
to go.
That works too.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's been a bit of fun. But here's a question for you, panel. Is Google 5 years too late or is Facebook 5 years too early?
I don't think Facebook's 5 years too early. Facebook is...
Was it timely?
It's been extraordinarily popular despite the fact that Graham detests it as a social networking platform. It's incredibly popular.
I didn't
popular.
Say it hadn't been popular. No.
But
I've only got 750 million subscribers.
Facebook's often caused a lot of upset because they do stupid things with people's privacy and with people's security
settings.
Yeah,
like Google don't.
Well, no, that's a fair point, Graham, as well, but... And Google has had a lot of dry runs and a lot of fails at social networking as well.
They're getting a lot less tolerant now.
Wave thing they tried and failed?
Google Wave.
Google don't try stuff for the fun of it anymore. They're scrapping a lot. They got rid of Google Labs and a lot
they
of
The other thing was Google Buzz. Yeah. They tried and then they
Screwed up the privacy on that.
They screwed up the privacy on that. They automatically started sharing everything with everybody in your contact list without them consenting to it. So they've had a few hacks at it as well. But I think the difference with Google Plus now is that you do have this concept of circles. As Adam said, you can do this in Facebook. It's just very, very difficult to do. It's not clear.
Very difficult to do. It involves dipping into the preferences and actually learning how it works, which most people don't bother
to do. It's not actually that difficult.
Can I say it's not intuitive?
Yes, it's not intuitive, but it's not actually difficult.
Whereas Google makes it an upfront, it makes it the main
Google brings
focus.
It to your attention. Yeah. Facebook doesn't. That's the difference.
I think they're going to be on a winner with the circles.
Yeah, I think that people will change, though. I don't want another Facebook. I'm not going to change just because it's Facebook. Well, just because it's Facebook that's not Facebook. You've got to have something better.
You may not want to change, but Facebook is possibly heading towards its middle age. And maybe people coming new to social networking will now have a different choice. And you might find that Facebook in 10 years' time is the social network of the past and of the old fogies and of the Adam Turners and the Graham Cullions.
Exactly. We'll be talking about Facebook the same way we talk about MySpace now.
That's right.
That's quite possible.
It's interesting. The chat's actually come on topic with us at the moment. Georgia has basically said Google Plus is too late. And Darren in the UK has basically said Google Plus is where Facebook needs to be. Now, I sort of agree with Darren a little bit there. You look at what Google has around it in respect to it has the database that Facebook would dream of because Google's been out there collecting all sorts of interesting...
No, Facebook has the database that Google will dream of.
Really?
That's why Google wants to be Facebook. Because they want all that personal information about you.
Maybe they have more information. But if you look at what Google has a lot of sign-ups over the years with the Gmail accounts, and it has a lot of business sign-ups and things like that. So
they want your Facebook details. They want your personal details. They want to know what you're interested in, who you're hanging out with, what you're doing. They can get some of that from your Google searches, but that's why they're doing it. Yeah. Because they want all that information that you're given to Facebook is not available to Google. And for Google, the ultimate sin is to do something and not put it on the web where they can get it, with the broad web where they can get it. So they don't want all this data locked up in Facebook. They want it with them so they can leverage it and data mine it rather than Zuckerberg doing it.
Now, we mentioned it before, but Google Plus is currently in beta, which means that it's still being developed. They're still ironing out problems with it, and it's not generally available to everybody.
Yeah, you want an invite? Start Dr. Ron.
Absolutely. If you want an invitation to Google Plus, if you want to get on and have a look and see what it's all about,
be one of the millions.
Send us an email. Send an email through to feedback@techtalkradio.com.au, and we'll do our best to send you an invitation.
Did you know, whilst we're talking about internet and privacy, in the Chrome browser they have a new feature called Incognito?
I did. I got
that's
shown
been in Chrome from the start. That's not new.
It says new on mine, but anyway. Well, I stand corrected, Graham.
Sorry. One of the great features of Chrome from the start.
Incognito is a wonderful device. Obviously, Graham's used it quite a bit. I was watching some people use it the other day, and I thought, oh, that looks pretty cool. And
watching somebody use it kind of defeats the purpose.
Yeah, well, I was standing over the shoulder of someone at the time. And, yes. So when you're surfing places where you don't want to leave a trail, Graham?
Yes.
Ron? Anyone?
Why do you look at
porn mode?
Yeah, correct.
All the browsers have had that for a long time.
Porn mode.
Yeah, it is. Let's be honest here, right? It's porn mode. Firefox was one of the early ones to have it. Internet Explorer's got it. Even Safari's got it.
Explain how it works, Andrew, for everybody listening who's never heard of it before.
Well, if you hit the little spanner icon there in the top right-hand corner of Chrome, which is where your settings are, the third one down is new incognito mode. And it removes cookies. It doesn't serve cookies. It just keeps everything really plain Jane. And any places you go to or anything you do is not recorded in a history file. You know how sometimes you go to where my page is last viewed?
That's right. It doesn't record the history, doesn't keep stuff in your cache, doesn't keep
but, so you does, do your searches get recorded on the other end, though?
Of course they do.
Oh, yeah.
It's that's not gonna, the thing. It's not,
it can't affect the behaviour of everything else on the internet. It just doesn't save it in your own history.
But what people are starting to ask for is something different. People are starting to ask for an opt-out mode where not if someone sits down at my computer, they can see what I was doing, but the world and Google and everyone else who's monitoring what I'm doing can't track what I'm doing. Because I can put on privacy mode and go and do something in private and know that someone else can't look at my computer. But if I was searching for those private things on Google and was still logged in to a Google account, then I'm sure that's all registered against my account and my IP address and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
People are looking for features in their browser that'll let
that's
them
That's what the
out
sign
that
out button
well.
On the top right in Google pages
even,
is for.
Even then, it'd be still mapped to your IP address and stuff like that. You can't go and search for, you know, how to build a bomb on Google and not expect someone to come knocking on your door eventually.
No, that's right. The internet still has to work and it still has to... Your
I mean,
computer
you have
to
look more
to
than just that
numbers.
Phrase. But, you know, you can't look for really suspicious things like when Sheldon started looking for uranium and something else in the Big Bang Theory and got a knock on the door.
That's right.
It was uranium and he was sneaking time on a supercomputer and, yeah, so the feds knocked on his door. That will happen because people on the other end are monitoring what you're...
It has happened. We spoke about earlier in the show. People are being knocked on doors. So, what are you doing with all this pyrotechnics equipment?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, what people are starting to ask for is ways to block that as well. So, not just privacy mode on my end, but privacy mode on the other end. And that's a lot more complicated.
So, if you're in incognito mode on either that or, as Warlock was saying, on I think Safari has it as well. I'm not a Safari user, so we'll take Warlock's word for it.
Gareth in our chat room says Opera has it too.
Oh, good.
Pretty universal.
Just don't log in with your Gmail account when you're in.
Yeah, don't think you could then. Don't think you could then do illegal things and no one will catch you because it's not stopping the rest of the world from monitoring
it's
what
just
you're doing.
No, it's only peculiar to that computer.
Yeah,
so
it's
even
just
if,
stopping
even if you're,
someone else looking at
as,
your computer.
As you guys have said, it's just so that the missus doesn't know where you've been on the family computer.
That's exactly right. Yep. It won't even in a corporate environment, the people who run your office network can probably still see where you're searching.
Don't make the mistake of thinking you can browse porn at work and no one will know because you're right.
The it IT doesn't leave department, a trace on the computer, but it does on the rest of the network.
Yeah, the network logs and all are still there. They know what you were looking at and which computer and what time.
God, now you tell me.
Yeah, sorry, mate.
Sorry. No one will notice, Dr. Ryan. It'll be okay. I saw what you were looking at the other day.
Keep up the cash payments and it'll all go away.
Oh, well, I'll do that.
We won't go into that on the radio.
We certainly
stop blushing.
Now, you do talk about this being, and we had a bit of a laugh about this being porn mode and so on, but there are legitimate reasons
I'm sure there are other reasons apart from porn to use.
Well, especially if you're on a computer which is not yours, like in an internet cafe, for example.
I still wouldn't trust it. No, that's not enough.
No, but even within a family situation or something like that, it might be a young person searching for certain medical information about, you know, or for help with a mental illness or something like that. They don't want the world to know about what they're looking for. They're looking for help. They're looking for advice. That sort of thing can be very, very useful for someone in that sort of situation.
You're looking at birthday presents for your kids or your partner.
Oh, that too,
There are lots of legitimate reasons to use them. But
yeah,
that's a good idea.
We laugh about porn mode, but it's not just that. It has any number other of legitimate uses.
Well, it's just unfortunate the internet was born and bred on
finished,
that mode.
You can surf some porn at the same time.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Moving right along. Okay. I can come out of the podcast. Anyway, we'll start talking about Dr. Ron's surfing habits shortly, but maybe outside later on. Let me pick one at random because we're rapidly running out of time on tonight's show. We've got the Odd Spot Gadget and Website of the Week coming up in the not too distant, probably about 5 minutes off. But in the meanwhile, Mozilla, the manufacturers, the creators of the Firefox browser, guess what? They're going to have a bit of a go and build their own operating system to challenge Android. Have we got room in this galaxy for another...
No.
Operating system from another wannabe?
When you say Android, you're talking about mobile devices or handheld devices.
Well, yeah, mobile or whatever. It could actually end up being on a device of a larger scale, but Mozilla is working on its own mobile browsing system at this stage to go up against the likes of Apple and Google. The so-called Boot to Gecko, or B2G project, will use some of the same code as found in Google's Android, but much of it will be written from scratch. Gecko is a name for the rendering engine used in Firefox. Did you know? I didn't.
Yep.
There you go. I must admit, I do like Firefox's running. But anyway, yes, yet another one. Don't know whether
there's
enough
room for
another one.
Well, they want to do it because Android's not all open source. Not everything of Android is laid open for everyone to see. Mm-hmm. And for some people, it's a philosophical thing as much as anything that they want to use things that are completely open source and they can look under the bonnet and know what's happening. And from that perspective, I can understand why people want to do it. But from a practical perspective, I'm yet to be convinced that we need another hero.
Well, in this situation, it's not so much... Well, the big thing that will come out of this is not necessarily an end result, but a lot of development work. So it doesn't matter if the Mozilla project doesn't produce in the end the world's best operating system or, you know, mobile user interface or whatever it might happen to be. What counts in this case is that there'll be a lot of talented and motivated people doing a lot of development work in the area, and that what will happen is that those ideas will feed back into other projects like Android. So I think even though it may never be the world's most popular platform, it's still going to be a worthwhile project to do just to do the development work.
Yeah, I can see your point, but maybe their time would be better spent just trying to fix Android.
But they're not Android. That's the point. They're Mozilla. Yeah.
I can see your point.
I must admit, I'm a firm believer of the open source stuff. Dr. Ron and I built some FreeNAS stuff the other day, which is a network accessible storage. And it was just free software that you download and you plug it into your old computer that you've got sitting in the corner and plug a few drives in there. And guess what?
FreeNAS is brilliant.
It is. It is. We've come to. You built one for home. You were that
built one for home too. Yeah.
Yeah. It's on my list of things to play with.
And it's Linux based and it's all free and all you need is an old SD, one of little sticky things.
Yeah, you run it off a memory stick plugged into your computer. That way you don't have to install an operating system on your hard drive.
Right, now that I know that, I'm going
to
try it.
You don't have to install it on your hard drive. So your entire hard drive is available for storing whatever you want to store in it, not an operating system.
That's right.
It's absolutely brilliant and it does every protocol under the sun.
Windows shares, Apple shares, Linux shares.
Even obscure things like
Stock Exchange shares.
Like iSCSI, hit your nerd alert button if you want to, iSCSI.
Okay. Could you leave the operating...
There we go. There's an alert button. Yeah, good.
Could you leave the operating system on the computer?
You could, but why would you?
Why would you?
Because then you don't want to wipe your computer in case you want to use it for something else.
No,
later.
You dedicate a machine specifically for storage.
I don't like dedicating anything to anything. What if I want to do something else with
it? Well, you can.
I really like the idea of being able to run it off the USB stick and then pull the USB stick out if I want to set it up as a Windows machine again.
You could do that. You just say that drive, isolate it when you're making the NAS. See, I've got an old Hewlett-Packard machine, which has got four slots on the side down the bottom for four drives and two up the top. So I got six drives, six times two. There's 12 terabytes sitting in one box.
And not only that, but you can rate it so that it's fault tolerant, so that if a hard disk fails, you don't lose all your data. Yeah.
If you're a little bit tech savvy and you want to try and build something like this, go to www.freenas, so it's freenas.org. That's where you can download it and have a look.
And believe me, you only need to be a little bit tech savvy. You don't need to be the world's biggest geek to run this stuff. It just works. It's great.
It does.
It's all controlled through a web interface. So easy.
And the great thing about it is everyone has an old computer at home, which they're either contemplating putting out onto the
Nature Strip. I saw it on the way here.
Yeah.
Yep. And all you need is a couple old hard drives, and before you know it, there's a great place to put your movies, your photos, as a backup system for home.
And before long,
all sorts of things.
Look, before long, you'll try it on a second-hand computer like that or your old computer, but before long, it'll be the center of your home network. It'll have all your movies and all your photos and everything on it. You'll have multiple hard drives in it. You'll go down. You can buy from the local computer shop, a $300 or $400 computer. You can put in three or four 2-terabyte drives for, a couple hundred bucks each or whatever it is, and you can make a fault-tolerant system that's got a huge amount of storage for next to no money these days.
It's
so easy. No operating system cost.
No licensing costs.
Definitely the way of the future.
I was at my local computer shop the other day. 2 terabytes cost me $86, I think.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So you buy four of those, you set them up in a RAID 5 array, you boot off a memory stick.
Oh dear, play Noodle it again.
In 10 years' time, every house will have a home server the way that...
Windows have tried with home server.
Yeah, I know, they were too soon. No one wanted it. Okay. Like, 10 years ago, only a handful of nerds had Wi-Fi networks. Now, I would say more houses have them than not. I think home servers of one design or another will be the same in 10 years' time.
Well, thankfully, manufacturers have packaged wireless with, like, ADSL modems and internet modems.
That's exactly right. Yep.
And now you can get out of the box, like, Netgear ReadyNAS servers and all that kind of stuff as well. And it just makes sense.
You can do that too. Yep. And... the Windows Home Server product we talked about on the show several weeks ago, and people like HP are building machines, selling it with the software
preloaded. Yeah, just turn it on.
Now, there's no incompatibility between running your Windows Home Server on you know, on your HP machine that you've bought and running something like a FreeNAS bulk storage server sitting right beside it.
You could do both, yeah.
There's no conflict there. They'll work together. It's and you can build yourself a really nice way of having all your media available, all online, all over wireless, all available to every PC in the home, so that you don't have to worry about, oh, those photos are on Muggins' PC and not on mine.
Muggins. It's a valid point you make, Graham, because if you actually go and do a stock take of your digital photos, ever since we've had these, you know, whiz-bang, fandangled digital cameras, we've been taking up hard disk space at a ferocious rate.
Yep.
And I think I can't even back up all the photos that I've got now to about half a dozen Blu-rays. So the NAS option and multiple drives is really good. And obviously, things like what Google Plus is doing is good too, but it's not to that capacity
yet. And then the most critical of them, the actual family photos, the ones that you can't afford to lose, you then copy onto an external drive and you give to your aunt.
Yep, that's right.
And you burn them to a DVD and you give them to your other aunt.
Yep.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people out there who at their 21st birthdays are not going to have baby photos.
My dad did that the other day. I've lost it already.
Everything. There are so many people out there that have their kids' baby photos on one computer, and that computer is a ticking time bomb.
Oh,
all hard drives fail. It's just a matter of time. If you don't have them backed up, you will lose everything, and your kids will have no baby photos. I know that sounds harsh, but it's true. It happens to people.
No, you're spot
back
on.
Back up before it happens
and
to
you. And you can go and you can buy a 2 terabyte external drive,
but
plug it in.
But you can't buy your photos
copy
back.
It, copy everything on and give it to your aunt or your next-door neighbour or whoever to
put
take
it online,
care of for you.
Put it in Google Docs. Put
anywhere.
It
anywhere. The more anywhere. Copies, the safer right you are. Yep.
Just be careful. There's always one photo you don't want to get out.
Yeah, not that photo.
Not that photo. So just double-check them before you give them out. The kids can have a shock if you're not careful. Oddspot, gadget, website of the week after this.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
This is breakfast radio in some parts of the world.
He wanted to ring the police, but he wanted to do so anonymously.
Speaking of Qantas,
You shoot yourself in the face.
Dr. Ron, have you cyber squatted?
There are free tools to do most of these things.
I usually enjoy your podcast.
Oh.
Because the old iPad is just
That's
like,
what the iPad's for.
Entertaining.
Put your fingers in your ears. La, 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 la.
Informative.
The consumer is the winner.
Independent.
You've got to find the sweet spot.
While listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool. This thing is amazing.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my hole.
This week's gadget by Motorola is a phone and a media server and a laptop. And Adam, what the hell is a Motorola Atrix?
Well, what it basically is, it's a 4-inch Android phone.
Right.
Which costs you about $800 outright.
Yep.
But for another $450, you can buy a notebook shell for it. So you basically buy an 11-inch keyboard with a screen, but it's got no brain in it.
Okay.
And then there's
sounds
a
like
slot.
An old dumb terminal, like the
yeah,
good old
it
days.
Is basically. And there's a slot on the back, and you slot the Atrix phone into the back, and now you can use the phone as a notebook. And then what it does is, when it's in notebook mode, it gives you a full desktop running a version of Firefox being run from the phone. So you've got a full web browser, plus you can access all the phone features. So you can see the phone screen and run applications that are on the phone, plus have Firefox. So it's sort of like, rather than having to switch your data between, oh, I'm doing stuff on my phone now, I'm doing stuff on my netbook, I've got to keep it all in sync.
Have you had a play with one?
Your phone, yeah, I have.
Yep.
Your phone becomes your netbook when you need it to, and then when you don't, you just put this light shell back in your bag and use it as a phone.
But then don't you brain yourself when the phone rings and you pick it up to put it to your ear?
Well, that's the thing, is when you can't...
take your eye out with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
you can use a Bluetooth headset to make phone calls. You can still use it completely as a phone while it's in the shop. I'm not necessarily convinced it's for everybody. It's got to meet a specific need. But if it sounds like the kind of thing you've been looking for, take a look at it. Another thing is to consider is the ASUS ePad Transformer, which is a tablet that becomes a notebook.
Our gadget of the week, Andrew, Motorola's Atrix 4G.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Tuesday, the 9th of August, is Census Night.
Oh, you're going to do it e-wise?
Yeah, absolutely. Have a look at this.
We're going out, so we don't have to do it.
I'm still cross with my wife because she was 8.5 months pregnant at the last census. She would not get on a donkey and ride back to my parents' house.
She bollocksed it up.
Counted.
Oh, no.
I was very cross.
Have a look at this website. It's called spotlight.abs.gov.au. For an infographic of your demographic, you can click start, answer a few questions, and the Australian Bureau of Statistics will draw a nice little diagram of where it thinks you fit in the world.
Nerd.
It's completely anonymous. It's a bit of fun. You can post to your Twitter or your Facebook wall if you choose to do so, but it's good. Have a look.
Very good.
Waste a few minutes.
Yeah.
That's our website, spotlights.abs.gov.au.
Tech Talk Radio, App of the Week.
I've got the app of the week this week, and I came across this while surfing around during the course of the week, and I thought, what a great idea. If you've got an iPhone, have you ever wanted to take Super 8 movies? Remember the old film look that you used to get?
No, but keep talking.
It's so romantic. I figured, isn't this wonderful? You can actually, it's got presets in it. It's a little app. It's $1.99 to download, but I thought, you've got to have a look at this. It's got presets in it of all sorts of different colours where you can sort of like go back to the 60s, which, you know, is the sepia wash, then move forward into the 80s, and, you know, it was a bit more smoky and trippy type sort of stuff.
So it's an app to make your video look worse.
Yeah, it's called 8mm Vintage Camera, and it's available in the app. Yeah, the iStudio. No, it makes it look better, Adam. You've got an iPhone. You should try it out. It'd be really good. Post it up on Vimeo or YouTube or one of those sort of things would also be pretty good sort of to do as well. So, you know, I thought, well, what a good idea.
There's a TwitPic type application that does this as well for your still photographs on your phone. Do you know what that is? I'm trying to remember off the top of my head what TwitPic. It's called.
Oh, no.
It's not TwitPic, but something.
It's not Hipstamatic or something like
No. It'll come to me shortly, though, but that's very popular. A lot of people use it.
I just thought that was really cool because it's got a great little thing, a little easy to use dog. Just have a look on the iTunes or come to the website because we've got all the gadgets online that we've had during the course of the show this year.
Yep.
All on the website. So if you're listening to us outside and you're listening to us for the first time, who are these guys? We've got everything's online. Come and have a bit of a look. See, even Adam's View from the Couches are all there too, by the way, if you want to have a listen to some of the comical ones from earlier on in the piece. They're really good.
So
there you go. That was our app of the week, which was available on iTunes for the iPhone, the 8mm vintage camera. One for the collection.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
Ma, the meatloaf!
Bond. James Bond.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
This is a combined Odd Spot app of the week, really, although it would never get up as an app of the week. You a Justin Bieber fan, Andrew?
No.
Listening to the music this week, anyway, version 2.0.1 of the Justin Bieber Talking iPhone application has recently been released in Apple's iTunes store. Designed by a fan for the fans, you can tell Justin Bieber what to say and he'll say it on the screen of your iPhone. But wait, there's more. Now you can change his voice by adjusting the voice pitch setting.
It's turning me into a chipmunk.
Between the low pitch and high pitch.
Great.
There's a lot of lines there, but we're not going to explore any of them at the moment. Touch his face, nose, and lips.
Oh, no, come on, that's
enough. And you can see how he reacts. You can make him do funny faces, and you can record videos. More than 1 million copies
have
been downloaded.
Oh, no. Join us again next week. Don't go there. That's just not good. You have been listening to Tech Talk Radio. Adam Turner in from the bench this evening. Thank you, Adam, for coming across.
Thank you for having
me. Dr. Ron, thank you for coming 2 minutes down the road.
Thank you for having me.
And Graham, welcome back after off the sick bed, which has been good. A lot of it going around. Lena, hopefully, will be in next week. We'll have a computer games thing, too, which would be really good.
We'll have the squeaky one back next week.
Absolutely. We've got to go. Till next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT, and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellist Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Guest panellist is Justin Dunlop. Expert opinion by Adam Turner and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and the world that rebroadcast the show. And a reminder that Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 8682 9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information.
And don't forget, you can follow the panellists on Twitter, join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk chat, and solve your tech issues in the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.